You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, we start with Magazine and Daniela Lazarová, who brings some of the stranger and quirkier stories from the Czech Republic. After that, we have a fresh edition of Czech books by Hannah Vaughan, who talks to the 16-year-old sci-fi writer Marcela Remeňová. And finally, we find out more about the tradition of municipal Christmas trees. That's in a letter from Prague by Ian Willoughby. All that coming up, and we start with Magazine and Daniela Lazarová.
Around 24 young Czechs joined the international No Pants subway ride on January 10th. The 15th annual No Pants subway ride took place in 38 cities around the world, with thousands of young people joining in and sharing the experience on social networks. In Prague, its fans traditionally meet up at the top end of Wenceslas Square, take off their pants and ride all three lines of the Prague metro before getting off at Ipe Pavlova and heading for a pub. Participation peaked in 2014 with some 200 young Czechs taking part. The tradition of winter swimming is strong in the Czech Republic, with a record number of people, 339, taking part in the 69th Alfred Nikodem Memorial Event, an annual swim in the Vltava River. The Polar Bear Dip, which takes place near the National Theatre Building in the centre of Prague, was established in 1923 by Prague hardyman Alfred Nikodem, who propagated winter swimming as part of a healthy lifestyle. Many others take place elsewhere in the country. For instance, 20 people, including one woman, braved the waters of the Morava River near Hodonín for the traditional New Year's cross-border swim to Slovakia and back on December 31st. But while the New Year's Day swimmers had enviable conditions, the temperature of the water was 6.9 degrees Celsius with sunny conditions that day, only the hardiest of the hardy took part in the Three Kings swim, marking the end of the holidays on January 6th. 30 swimmers jumped into the Vltava River from a boat near Charles Bridge in heavy snow. The temperature of the air was minus 2 degrees Celsius. That of the water was 3 degrees higher. A 63-year-old former miner has made headlines by his newfound passion, mountain climbing. Jan Cupa says that when he retired at 58 after 23 long years underground, he could barely walk up a flight of stairs and spent all his time on the couch watching TV. One day, his wife practically threw him out of the house, telling him to take a long trek in the mountains and get a breath of fresh air. He went, and he hasn't looked back. He developed a passion for the mountains, and in the last 3 years has climbed Lysá Hora, the highest peak of the Beskydy Mountains, every day of the year with only a few exceptions. Even in the coldest weather, he goes up stripped to the waist and very often barefoot. Suddenly, all my own energy has come back. I feel like a 20-year-old, he said in an interview for Respect magazine. Now he is planning to take part in an endurance race where the goal is to go up and down Lysá Mountain as many times as possible within the space of 24 hours. On the day of the race, he will be 64 and says he hopes to give himself a present in the form of a prize. An edible wedding dress was the hit of this year's Best Wedding Cake competition. The life-size lace-decorated wedding dress is the work of 3 pastry chefs and took 100 hours to make. It was tailored according to a real wedding dress by designer Sonia Hlaváčková, and the edible version is made of fondant, white chocolate, pearls and marchpane. The creation, weighing 90 kilograms, made the Czech Book of Records and is being kept in a climate-controlled glass box at the Museum of Records and Curiosities in Belhřimov. Embroidery is generally perceived as a hobby for elderly women, but that did not deter 53-year-old mechanic Petr Volner from trying his hand at it after a serious accident left him bedridden for months. "I had plenty of free time on my hands and no idea what to do with it," he says. To keep his hands nimble, he decided to embroider a cartoon by a well-known Czech illustrator. After a few days of struggling with a needle, he got the hang of it and was hooked. In 1993, he started work on a big project embroidering the country's most famous castles and chateaux. He now has 50 embroidery paintings, which required over 700,000 stitches and took 4,845 hours to produce altogether. The collection made it into the Czech Book of Records, and although Petr Volner is now fit once again, embroidery is not something he's about to give up. The railway station in the West Bohemian town of Plzeň is to get a piano for its main lobby. The piano was purchased from the sale of a painting in a charity auction held within the 2015 Plzeň European City of Culture project. The artists who contributed paintings to be sold at the auction could say what they wanted the money to be used for, and one of them asked for a piano in a public space. Czech Railways welcomed the idea, and so as of next week, tired and dusty travellers waiting for late trains will be able to cheer themselves up by strumming the piano.
That was Daniela Lazarová with Magazine. Now, our colleague David Vaughan was quite surprised when a little over 2 years ago his daughter came home from school and said that she had been invited to the launch of a book written by one of her classmates. Marcela Remeňová was only 13 when one of the top Czech publishing houses brought out her debut novel Seznámení, First Acquaintance. This has been followed by a second, a third is on the way, and that is even though Marcela has only just passed her 16th birthday. The 3 books will make up a sci-fi trilogy, Osm světů, 8 worlds, drawing us into a world that is almost like our own, but not quite. In Czech Books this week, Hanna Vaughan interviews her school friend Marcela about her remarkable literary career.
I am sitting in one of Prague's cafes with a young Czech writer called Marcela Remeňová.
Hello, I'm Marcela. I'm 16 years old and I'm a student of Jan Neruda Grammar School in Prague, and I have written 2 books and I'm finishing my 3rd one.
When did you start writing? You're very young, so when did it all start and why?
I always try to create my own world that didn't exist. And when I learned to write, I started to put it on paper so my parents and my friends could read the stories as well.
How do you manage to get these stories actually published and made into real books?
After I have written the first one, I send it by email to the publisher Smala Pronta, and after several weeks or months, they replied me and they told me that they want to publish my book, and that's how it was, and I was really happy about it.
Where do you find your inspiration?
Inspiration comes to me itself and its own will, with the ideas as well. It could be anywhere, when I'm in the shower, in the car, when I'm listening to music, or with my friends, or on the vacations during the sunset, when I think about something interesting and then I want to write it down.
Now to the books themselves, would you like to briefly explain what they're about?
The first book, First Acquaintance, is about young teenage girl who lives in New York with her adoptive family, and one day she finds out that they're something like aliens, they're from another galaxy and has some kind of superpowers, and it's changed her life a lot. And after that she finds herself in many dangerous situations. In the second book, called The Bee People, we get to eight worlds. There is a big war between eight brothers and mysterious insect creatures called Bee People.
These eight worlds, what exactly are they?
Eight worlds are eight planets where eight brothers live. They are like us. They have the look of people, but they have some kind of superpower. They can teleport themselves on another planet, and they're also stronger than us, etc.
The main character of a book is a young girl called Leia, so do you sympathize with her? Is Leia basically you, or is it just a totally made-up character?
Leia is not based on me, I could only wish, because I think she's something more than me. I try to put my wishes and think I want to be in her. She is better in many ways. She's stronger, have some skills that I don't have. But some friends of mine said that they could see her a little bit in me.
Some bits are also written from the point of view of, for example, Harry, Leia's friend. So do you find it harder to write from the perspective of a boy than of a girl?
I don't think it's hard, but it's a little bit different, and I like it, because after I write from the view of some female, it's nice to change it and write something different, so I'm not bored.
You've chosen a couple of extracts for us. What is the first one about?
The first extract is from The First Acquaintance, and it's from view of a main male character, Harry, and it's a part when he first meets Thomas, Leah's father.
"You live here?" asked Thomas in awe, squinting up at the skyscraper with its penthouse apartment. "Yes," I replied, and couldn't help smiling. "You obviously earn quite a bit," he said, impressed. I jumped out of the car and headed for the door, where I was greeted by a sexy blonde with beautiful blue eyes in a tight, low-cut T-shirt. My secretary, Angelica. Unfortunately, Angelica is a robot. People are terribly unreliable.
Do you have a favourite character in your book?
I think I like all of my characters. That's the reason I put them in my book. But if I have to choose some, it's probably Thomas, Leah's adoptive father, and also James, who we first meet in the second book.
Whilst reading the book, I noticed some lovely illustrations. Would you like to tell something about those?
I found a student in school where I was going to drawing lessons. His name was Milan Galia, and he made the illustrations for my book. In the second book, the illustrations are created by Tomáš Hájek, who is also an animator. And the reason I want my illustrations in book are that I like when there isn't only text in books I read, and it's kind of refreshing.
You've also chosen a second extract. Would you like to briefly explain that one as well?
It's from Bee People, and it's also from View of a Man. His name is Matthew, and in this extract we learn more about his ability to draw.
Although I hadn't felt like drawing, I eventually opened my eyes, sat down and picked up a sketch pad from the rickety bedside table. Again it wobbled, and as usual made me want to kick it as everything on it crashed to the floor. Ignoring the mess for once, I reached into my pocket and instead of my pencil, took out some coloured crayons and started drawing. I let my hand do whatever it wanted, without guiding the crayons at all. What emerged, unsurprisingly, was a dragonfly, slightly larger than normal life size. Now that I was alone, I used the opportunity to try out something I used to be good at, though I'd never quite discovered how I did it. I'd never come across this newfound ability of mine in anyone else, not even the strongest of the eight worlders, and didn't want to draw attention to it. I was afraid it might immediately be misused for military ends. I concentrated as much energy as I could into my index finger until it felt it might burst into flames, then touch the drawing of the dragonfly. The membranous wings, until then perfectly still, began to tremble, and the whole insect took off from the page, leaving nothing behind. With a smile, I laid the sketchpad on the bedside table beside me and watched as my animated creation fluttered around the room.
When you tell people that you've written two books, how do they usually react?
Most of the time they are surprised by the fact that I have written books so young, and they want to know the name of books and if they can buy them and read them, etc.
Have the books brought you any fame? Do people recognize you or something like that?
No, I don't think so, but there isn't any difference in my life. But I hear from friends of my friends or friends of my family that they read it and they like it. And I was in a few newspapers and done a few interviews.
Thank you, Marcela, for speaking to me.
Thank you very much as well.
Marcela Remeňová was Hannah Vaughan's guest for that edition of Czech Books. And now it's time for our regular letter from Prague, this time brought to you by Ian Willoughby.
Last weekend, we were wondering where to dump our Christmas tree, when through the window we spied a sizable heap of discarded conifers on the square. Ours soon joined the pile, which I later saw pictured on Facebook with the caption, "The Concentrated Spirit of Christmas." I've heard it said that Prague's abandoned Christmas trees are every year collected to be fed to the elephants at the city's zoo. This is such a nice idea that I'm afraid to look into whether it's actually true. As in other countries, trees are usually taken down and decorations put away on the 6th of January. It's Tri Králové, or Three Kings Day, otherwise known as the Feast of the Epiphany. On Three Kings Day, I was ill and confined to bed, so can't say for certain that that was the day the municipal tree on the nearby Jiřího's Poděbrad Square actually came down. But when I was laid up, I did come across a fascinating article on the subject of public Christmas trees in this part of the world. According to one of the authors of a book on Czech Christmas traditions, who was interviewed by Respect, the first municipal tree in the then Czechoslovakia was erected on Brno's Náměstí Svobody in 1924. The local writer Rudolf Těsnohlídek, whose poem was the basis for Janáček's The Cunning Little Vixen, had happened on an almost frozen baby left in woodland. Shaken and determined that no other infant be abandoned in such a way, he launched the charity Christmas Tree of the Republic. Cash collection boxes were placed under the tree in Brno, and as the idea spread, at subsequent ones elsewhere in the still young state. Politicians, mayors, scouts, suckles, legionnaires and others got involved in the drive, according to the piece in Respect. Some of the money went to a newly established children's home in Brno, named Dagmar, after the Danish monarch whose own Christmas tree campaign had inspired Tjesnolidek. When Hitler invaded the Sudetenland, the funds helped the thousands of Czechs displaced from the border regions, some of whom were staying at Sokol sports halls. The Nazis banned the Christmas collections as an expression of patriotism. For their part, the communists insisted that there were no children in need and brought the tradition to a halt in 1952. It was revived in 1968, but only the once, before normalisation put the custom back on ice. In 1992, 3 years after the Velvet Revolution, then First Lady Olga Havlova ceremonially switched on the lights on a Christmas tree at Prague Castle, linked to a collection appeal. By then, municipal trees had already returned to main squares around the country.
Ian Willoughby with that edition of Letter from Prague. And that brings us to the end of today's programme here at Radio Prague. You will find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. This is Ruth Franková saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.